What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 135, and today we're going to be talking about something commonly referred to as heavy water or deuterium. And this is actually very interesting to me. Tom knows way more about it than I do, and every time he brings it up to me, I find it fascinating. So I kind of pressured him to look into this and actually let's make a whole podcast on it because I think it's extremely interesting. So Tom, do you want to just touch on, I guess, what deuterium is or why we're even talking about it?
Yeah, first I want to credit the Center for Deuterium Depletion. Their website is ddcenters.com. That's where I got pretty much all this information for this week's podcast. They have a bunch of videos, articles, research papers on all things deuterium, ketogenic diets, cancer, and a whole bunch of other chronic diseases. You'll kind of figure out why there's all that information on ketogenic diets and the diseases later on. They are ran by Dr. Ann Cooper, and she does a lot of research on cancer and many other chronic diseases. And they also work with the Keto Pet Sanctuary in Austin, Texas. And they use a ketogenic diet to treat cancer mostly, but a few other chronic diseases, and mostly dogs and cats as well. And I've used this as a major resource to help manage seizures in my dog, Cooper. They're a great resource. So if you do have any pets, I highly recommend kind of like looking into the Keto Pet Sanctuary. You can find them like on Facebook, and they also have a pretty good website.
Oh, also, yeah, just real quick, a long time ago we did a podcast on how to feed your best friend. I'm pretty sure that's what we called it. So it's basically the proper diet for your animal if you have a dog. So I recommend you listen to that podcast if you have a dog out there and you're not quite sure what to feed it.
Yeah, that was a great podcast. That podcast wasn't based off of their research. It was mostly just based off of like me and Tyson's research, kind of just like looking into different things. The Keto Pet Sanctuary is more about if you have a dog, either with like cancer or diabetes, something like that. Well, you know, one of the many diseases that we've talked about how a keto diet works is just kind of how to formulate it for a dog.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
It's really not. And it's not that different than humans.
Yeah. It's very, very similar.
Yeah.
All right. So on to deuterium. So first off, let's just kind of talk about what it is. And it's commonly called heavy water. So deuterium is a hydrogen isotope that contains both a proton and a neutron in the nucleus. So this doubles the size and the weight of the atom. So a normal hydrogen atom is actually called protium. So when we talk about like hydrogen, like over 99% of the time, we're talking about protium. Deuterium is a very, very rare, it's natural, but it's a very rare isotope of hydrogen.
Yeah, and just actually real quick, so with water, just for anyone out there, normally it's just referred to as H2O, so it's two hydrogens and one oxygen. That's what water is. So we're talking about those hydrogens in water, in a deuterium sense, would be heavier and bigger, right?
Yeah, it would be twice as heavy, or not quite twice as heavy, but it would be much heavier.
Uh-huh.
And if you had an ice cube made of two deuterium atoms instead of normal hydrogen, that ice cube would actually sink in water instead of float. That's the kind of difference we're talking about. That's why deuterium water is called heavy water, because it makes that water molecule so much heavier.
Yeah.
And it's a natural occurring isotope, and it makes up about 150 parts per million of natural water. Or to put that in like relatable terms, it's 0.015%. So it's there. It's just very, very small amount.
Tiny. Yeah. And you can think of, he keeps saying the term isotope, and I know that even when you say neutron and protons, that's also very confusing. But when you hear isotope, you can just think of, it's a different version of the same thing. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, it's just like a rarer version of what we typically think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So if it's so natural, then why should it be of any concern? Well, just like most things we consume today, the ratios are all off. A lot of the foods that we consume have way too much deuterium than what we were designed for. So high deuterium levels are linked to many chronic diseases, cancer, insomnia, depression, aging, ALS, diabetes, epilepsy, PCOS, and pretty much any other disease rooted in mitochondrial health. So, I mean, like, basically every single chronic disease that we've talked about in our 134 episodes that we've done so far, yeah, all of those related to deuterium.
You know, something that I thought of when I just read through these notes, and I'm sure you did too when you research on that website, how this author or the person who really like heads this whole deuterium thing, they linked everything to deuterium as far as like, you know, conditions.
Yeah.
Did you see it like that, where they're through their eyes, everything was deuterium?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Like, if you're a breathing expert,
Everything's about breathing. Everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I totally get that. But how deuterium affects your mitochondria, and your mitochondria affect everything, it's like, yeah, I totally see where they're coming from. Maybe it's not the primary cause of every single illness out there, but is it a cause for all these different illnesses? I definitely think so.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I agree with that.
So to get your deuterium levels tested, they offer four tests from their website, and they range from $75 to $275, and you can do these at home. So you can test, like, your own tissue levels of deuterium. It's just a breath test. It's not very invasive. You can also test, like, the air in your home, the food that you're eating, or your primary water source. So they have four tests. You can just get them all checked out if you're like, kind of concerned about this. So what deuterium does is it helps things grow. It's essential, and everyone needs it. And it's honestly, it doesn't matter if you need it or not. You can't really avoid it because it's just everywhere. The problem is when we get too much. So one thing like cancer is things growing kind of out of control. That's kind of where this deuterium kind of falls into place. So remember that deuterium is twice the size and weight as a normal hydrogen atom. So when we have too much deuterium in our tissues, more of it gets used by our mitochondria during metabolism. This really large and heavy form of hydrogen wrecks our mitochondria because they're not designed for it. If you've ever seen Tommy Boy, you remember that scene, the fat guy in a little coat, when Chris Farley, who's twice the size and weight as David Spade, puts on his jacket, dances around, and then the jacket rips in half because that little-ass jacket wasn't made for giant Chris Farley. It's a pretty funny scene. I'm pretty sure most people know about it.
Yeah, no, it's true, and it's a good example.
Yeah, that's exactly what this deuterium form of hydrogen is doing to our mitochondria. It's destroying them because the mitochondria are used to something half the size and half the weight, and they're just not able to deal with it.
So for that website, does it go into like the electron transport chain? Does it say that specifically?
Yes, because hydrogen are, like, one of the primary donors. So, like, that's why.
Yeah, so basically, we have a podcast on everything at this point. But you can go to the website and just search CoQ10 because we have a podcast on that. And it talks about the electron transport chain. And that happens in our mitochondria. And that's the primary site of energy creation with our entire body. But how that, it's called the electron transport chain because our body sends an electron down a series of reactions, a bunch of redox reactions, and at the end of it, it produces energy. But every electron is associated with a hydrogen. So a normal hydrogen would be fine, but a hydrogen twice the size in this very, very intricate and very, very tiny environment, which is like the inner mitochondrial membrane, I'm sure it's so delicate that something twice the size, like Tom said, is going to just wreck shop like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, like there's such a tiny amount in like a typical system that it really wouldn't be that much of an issue. But once that number starts creeping up more and more mitochondrial damage will happen. And one thing that we've talked about throughout, like, the entire time we've been doing this podcast is how many things damage our mitochondria. So it's just another thing out there that's damaging our mitochondria, on top of, you know, radiation, pesticides, just kind of like everything damages our mitochondria. Like, now we're just adding one more thing to the mix.
Yeah.
So we can handle a little bit of mitochondrial damage. Like, our body has mechanisms in there to break down the damaged mitochondria and create new ones. But if that damage occurs at a rate faster than what we can manage, then all sorts of metabolic dysfunction occurs, such as cancer, diabetes, heart disease, all those other things. So why are the levels so much higher than they used to be? Well, there's kind of three main reasons. The first one is there's just more in our environment. Over the last 50,000 years, a lot of ice all over the planet has melted. A lot of the deuterium was kind of just like stored in that ice. So now we just have more deuterium accessible that was like previously stored. So that's kind of one reason. Another reason is deuterium is in many pesticides, such as glyphosate. And a lot of farmers like to use it because deuterium helps things grow. So farmers use this, it increases yields. And this might be one of the primary reasons why glyphosate causes cancer, is because of the mitochondrial damage that this deuterium does.
You know, did it actually talk about how deuterium's in pesticides? Because that, honestly, I don't understand that. So when they create the pesticides, they make it with deuterium? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know if they're, like, intentionally putting deuterium in it, yeah. But deuterium is in pesticides.
Okay, so they just know it's in pesticides.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So a lot of the research with deuterium is, like, in its infancy. Like, we'll know a lot more about this in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Like, you know, we're going to learn a lot more about it. It's not like this is a very studied thing when it comes to human health. A lot of the research with deuterium is with, like, nuclear reactors and, like, bombs and stuff like that. That's where a lot of the research is for deuterium. Not so much on, like, the human health aspect.
Got it. Okay. But we do know, at least at the very minimum, pesticides like glyphosate are a source of deuterium.
Yes. Okay. And, yeah. So deuterium's also, so it's in pesticides, and it's also highest in carb foods, such as grains, sugars, root vegetables like potatoes, carrots. And since it is in those pesticides, it goes into our water. So there's also more deuterium in our drinking water than there was before. So we've just increased the amount of all these different things that we eat in our diet. So we're consuming more, we're drinking more, and there's just more around altogether. So that's why, like, deuterium levels are a lot higher than they used to be.
Yeah. And everyone, like you said, everyone basically is on a high carb diet these days.
Yeah. I mean, unless you've been listening to this podcast and, you know, been following, like, an ancestral way of eating, yeah, like, most likely you're going to have pretty high deuterium levels.
Yeah.
So all of this does sound pretty scary, but there's a lot of easy things you can do to kind of fix this problem. So if you've been following our advice, then you should be on the right track. So if you eat lots of animal-based foods, especially grass-fed or pasture-raised, you're going to be good. Like, that should be the bulk of your diet. There is some suggestions that corn-fed animals, corn and soy-fed animals could be higher in deuterium, but they won't be anywhere near something like some grains or, like, you know, those root-based vegetables that I mentioned earlier. Those are going to be so much higher than, like, an animal that's been fed corn and soy. So if you're, like, you're really worried about it, go for the grass-fed or pasture-raised, but still, animal sources are going to be better than pretty much everything else. This is also another reason why you should only consume, like, organic fruits and vegetables. Even if there is going to be more deuterium in your carrot, if you're consuming an organic carrot, at least you're not getting more deuterium sprayed on top of it. So that's another reason to go organic, plus the, you know, the environmental reasons that organic's just better, more sustainable, that type of thing. And the biggest one is to follow a low-carb or a ketogenic diet. So not only is this going to limit the amount of deuterium that you're consuming, but the real magic here is that you're creating your own supply of deuterium-depleted water. inside your cells during fat metabolism. So I don't know if we've ever really talked about this, like the metabolic water, but this thing is like pretty magical.
No, we haven't.
We haven't talked about it yet?
No.
Okay. So we create between 1,700 and 3,000 liters of metabolic water a day, depending on how active we are. And the more active we are, the more fat we burn, and the more water is created. This is the cleanest water source around. So we create a lot of metabolic water primarily when we burn fat as a fuel source. That's why you want to go ketogenic, because you're creating some very, very clean metabolic water. And the reason, or this is the reason why camels have humps full of fat. They're one of the best fat burners on the planet and create lots of metabolic water as a result of that. This allows them to go long periods of time in a very hot and dry environment without drinking water. So they're able to walk across the desert because they're constantly hydrating themselves, because all that energy that they're using to walk around, they're creating their own water supply. That's why they're able to do that. That's kind of crazy, right?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, I know as a kid, people see camels and they just think it's a hump filled with water because they're in the desert. But the amount of space they have available to them, it wouldn't be efficient to just store water in there. They get way more water out of it by actually storing fat and then creating their own water supply.
Yeah, I mean, so like technically it's not water, but it pretty much is, because they're turning that fat into water. So they're just kind of little chemical factories like that. But I thought that was really interesting. And another animal that has very similar physiology but lives almost in a completely different lifestyle is a polar bear. So they don't have access to much fresh water either. So they rely on metabolic water to meet their hydration needs too. So in fact, if you see a polar bear drinking water, it's probably a sign that they're starving to death and don't have enough body fat to create the amount of metabolic water to like fit their needs. So that's just kind of like an interesting fact about a carnivore and a herbivore both using this metabolic water to keep them alive.
Oh yeah, no, it's very interesting. And a lot of people, I mean, obviously I've never even heard of metabolic water. And I don't know, we've talked about in the past, the only thing that's kind of closely touched on this is, I think we talked about, like, is water overrated at one point? We went through water recommendations, and a lot of people don't really realize that the food they eat, even if it's just, say, a hamburger patty, actually contains a lot of water. So we talked about that, but nothing like this.
Yeah, and this is one of the main reasons that, like, I'm a ketogenic athlete trying to do that, like, ultra marathon, that trying to train for a 100-mile race, is I try and take advantage of this as much as I can. By burning more fat, I'm hydrating myself better than I would be if I'm just sitting there drinking water. So, like, that's just another reason to go ketogenic, is you keep your body a lot more hydrated. So another way to reduce deuterium levels is to get enough sleep. So our bodies remove waste products like excess deuterium, like, through our brain, through the glymphatic system. That's just like your drainage system that our brain uses to get rid of a lot of stuff. It's similar to the lymphatic system that the rest of our body uses, but the lymphatic system that I know of only drains during sleep, or primarily drains during sleep. So getting enough sleep, best way to get all those waste products out of your brain for better health. And also during REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, our bodies use that extra glucose to, or our bodies burn that excess glucose in our bloodstream to get into ketosis faster. That's why, like, when you see somebody in REM sleep, you see their eyes switching, like, they're kind of, like, moving around a little bit, stuff like that. They're just, that's our body's ways of burning that extra glucose to get us back into ketosis faster. So if you're already following a ketogenic diet, you actually need less REM sleep than a normal person, or a typical person, not a normal person. A normal person should be in ketosis.
Yeah, for sure, but I never knew that.
Yeah, I always wondered, because, like, I have an Oura ring and it tracks my REM sleep, and my REM sleep is normally pretty low from, like, what a lot of places recommend, but that, like, normal recommendation is off of, you know, a typical carb burner, not a ketogenic person. So that's why.
Yeah, that's actually very interesting.
And also, like, you've probably noticed this while you're fasting too, that, like, you need a lot less sleep. Like, you can get, like, 5-6 hours of sleep and feel great.
Yeah.
And that's because you're already in a deep level of ketosis. You don't really need to go through that REM sleep cycle to burn that extra glucose if you don't have any.
That's very interesting. I always wondered why that, what that was about. Because everyone knows that when they fast, usually they sleep 4, 5, 6 hours, and they wake up feeling like a champ.
Yep. So it's like you're just kind of cutting some of your sleep cycles. You just don't need that extra step.
So you're just sleeping more efficiently.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
So once we are in ketosis, our bodies create more of that magical metabolic water that we discussed earlier. So that's why being in ketosis is such a great way to get rid of that deuterium or to have healthy deuterium levels. So another thing that we've talked about in the past that have tons of benefits and they also help lower deuterium, heat and cold therapy. So cold exposure just increases fat burning. Pretty simple, straight forward. The other one is heat exposure. So heat exposure increases sweating. That's going to increase deuterium excretion. So just your body's able to get rid of more of that deuterium. So heat and cold, both are great practices. I'm a big fan of both of them. I try and do both of them pretty much daily. It's summertime right now. Heat exposure is absolutely no problem.
Yeah, especially in California.
So here's one that you probably wouldn't typically think of, but it makes a whole lot of sense. So breathing properly increases fat oxidation because we need oxygen in order to burn fat. And another thing is the carbon dioxide that we have in our system determines the availability of that oxygen. So the more carbon dioxide that we have in our blood, the more available that oxygen is. So in order for our bodies to increase the amount of carbon dioxide we can maintain in our blood, we want to increase what's called our CO2 tolerance. So a great way to do this is called 4-7-8 breathing. So you inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 7, then exhale for 8. So pretty much anything that increases your exhale longer than your inhale will work on your CO2 tolerance. I do this breathing method pretty much every single day. I've noticed like a really big improvement in my carbon dioxide tolerance.
Yeah, I think it sounds real simple, but exhaling for 8 seconds is actually pretty hard. Like, that's not a very easy breathing technique, I think, for a lot of people, especially when they first start out.
Yeah, so like you'll notice like, oh, like, the first session, easy. Then you try and do it for a second time, gets a little bit harder, and then the third time gets a little bit harder. But like, if you work on that for like a week straight, you should be good. Like, it doesn't take long for your body to adapt to it. And if you really want to test your carbon dioxide tolerance, you can do what's called a control pulse. And again, this is something that's really easy to do. All you need is a watch. And what you do is, after you exhale, you just hold your breath, and you see how long you can hold your breath for until you feel like that constant need for hunger. You're not waiting until you pass out. You're not going like air starvation. Just like when you start getting uncomfortable, that's when you start breathing in again. So optimal levels are like 45 seconds to a minute. Anything above 30 seconds is considered to be healthy. So if your control pulse is like 5 seconds, 7 seconds, something like that, that's not a good sign. And you should definitely work on that. And that could be a sign that there's other issues going on.
Is that pretty common to have a control pulse that short?
I mean, if you're like in the hospital and you're in the ICU, you'll have like a 5 second control pulse, something like that. Jeez. Like, for those people, it's kind of common to be that low. For most individuals, I would imagine that, I mean, if you're not doing any of the carbon dioxide training, if you're just like a normal typical person, I would imagine you're in that like 15 to 20 second range. If you're somewhat active, I would think you should be above 20 seconds. And then if you've been like working on this, then you should be in that like 45 second to a minute range.
Okay.
I don't know if you can get to that 45 second to a minute range without actually working on it. When I first started practicing this, I was about at 24 to 26 seconds the first time I measured it. And now I'm like just under 45. I'm at like that 40 to 43 range. I measure this about twice a week. Oh, okay. I should start doing it more. But I do that 4-7-8 breathing almost daily.
When do you do it?
I normally do it, before I drive to work, when I get in my car, I do it right then. So like I start the car. I was mostly doing this over winter time because, you know, like you get in your car, you have your like windows fogged up. Yeah. So it's just kind of something to do while you're waiting for your windows to defrost. So it's kind of like that perfect time. But anytime, like first thing in the morning would be a good time.
That's actually like,
obviously
smart.
You can't do it while you're brushing your teeth, but like sometime first thing in the morning, that way you know you're actually going to do it. Because if you wait till later in the day, there's a good chance you'll forget.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty cool. That's an easy thing to do and see where you're at.
Yeah. The 4-7-8 breathing, you can do that for a few minutes. You can even do like a breathing technique like that. Cause that's not something you're going to pass out during. Like you can do that while you're walking, while you're driving, something like that. So that's a pretty easy breathing technique. And the carbon dioxide tolerance, like that is something you should do while you're sitting down and like not in a bathtub, not while you're driving. Because anytime you're holding your breath, there is a small chance that you could pass out. But just like, you know, just anytime you have 45 seconds to just waste, like, you know, it's not a lot of time. Anybody can find the time to do that.
Okay, so while you were talking, I Googled stopwatch. So I just did it right now for 30 seconds. And that wasn't the easiest thing. I probably could have went to 40, but it would have been real hard. So, yeah.
See? That's considered healthy.
Yeah, like, okay. I'll take 30.
I'm willing to bet if you worked on that, did that 4-7-8 breathing every day for, like, the next week, you'll probably be at, like, 35, 40 seconds by next week.
Okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's a good sign that you're healthy, you work out.
I'll take
it. You're doing all these things properly.
Okay.
Another thing that most people have probably heard about is deuterium depleted water. And I think this is an okay option, but it is pretty expensive. And if you're doing all the things that we talked about above, this shouldn't be an issue. Because remember, you're creating 1,700 liters of metabolic water a day. So you drinking one or two like liters of deuterium depleted water is nothing compared to the amount of metabolic water that you're creating.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus should be on creating your own natural supply of deuterium depleted water instead of ingesting a little bit here on the side.
Especially if it's not like, it's so cost prohibitive.
Yeah, because it's trendy. Deuterium's starting to get more and more popular. So it's just one of those things that it's like the new, like, fresh fad thing, like, kind of like how alkaline water is, and it's just, like, an overpriced, I don't want to call it a gimmick, because, like, there is some use for it, but, I mean, for the most people, I don't think it's worth it. I mean, if you're dealing with a chronic illness, like, you have cancer, and you're looking for every single thing you could possibly do to improve, then it makes sense. But if, like, you know, for me and you, like, we're already healthy, as drinking that deuterium depleted water, the only place it's going to make a difference is probably in our bank account, and that's it.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, I only recommend it if, you know, like you have, yeah, you're in a serious health condition and you need every single thing working for you, then I think it's worth it. So just to kind of like wrap everything up, deuterium levels are increasing in our food and water. I mean, there's some things you can do about it, but when it comes to drinking water, it's kind of like going to be there unless you want to spend a lot more on that deuterium depleted water. It damages our mitochondria and leads to many metabolic diseases, so it's definitely something that we should be concerned about, but it can be easily fixed by following a ketogenic diet and just living a healthy lifestyle. Something you should be concerned about, but if you've been listening to our podcast and have been following our advice, I mean, it's just kind of like another reason to go ketogenic and live in a natural lifestyle. Like, it just seems like all these things line up. It's like keto is better for, I guess, water now. It's better for diabetes. It's better for cancer. It seems like all these things just kind of just keep reinforcing each other. Like, the more and more we learn, it's like, oh, that's just another reason to do it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if I could just summarize it as put in layman's terms as possible, deuterium is basically a big hydrogen, so you can think of it like a double, like an oversized bowling ball. And our cells, we all know they're very tiny, they're very delicate, and they go in there and they just wreck shop. So that's why you want to really just limit deuterium as much as you can. And like Tom said, if you listen to us, you are already doing that. That's already part of the process. And that's something I never actually considered with creating these diet plans or even recommending low carb to people. I never really learned a lot about deuterium, but the more Tom talks about it, the more it's believable. And like I mentioned in the beginning, if you talk to a cardiologist, they're going to blame everything on something with the heart. If you talk to a kidney doctor, they're going to relate everything to the kidneys. But I really think people who focus on deuterium do have some actual ground to stand on because it can directly affect our mitochondria. That's a big, big problem. Yeah, hope you guys like the podcast. You can find all the information on TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate, review, subscribe, and or follow on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.